This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. U.S. President Donald Trump is in London for a NATO summit. He's under pressure from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to resist the temptation to wade into the British election campaign coming up later in December. Francesca Linnau reports.
At the London summit, marking NATO's 70th anniversary, leaders will try to put on a show of unity as they face questions about the future of the U.S.-led alliance. Trump is due to hold separate talks with German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron, who recently vented that NATO was experiencing brain death, prompting Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan to tell Macron to check that his own brain was not failing. Macron complained of a lack of strategic coordination between European allies on the one hand and the United States and Turkey on the other. US officials regard the NATO summit as a celebratory moment for Trump, as his pressure on member nations has led many to increase their military spending.
That's Reuters' Francesca Linnau reporting. Ukraine's president is speaking out about the phone call that spurred the U.S. impeachment inquiry. AP Sagar Magani has more.
Asked if there was a connection between the president's decision to block military aid to Ukraine and the two investigations he asked for, Volodymyr Zelensky said he did not speak with the president from a position of quid pro quo. He tells Time magazine, "I don't want us to look like beggars." The president later mischaracterized that.
The Ukrainian president came out and said very strongly that President Trump did absolutely nothing wrong. That should be case over.
In the interview, Zelensky said it's not about a quid pro quo, telling Time, "We're at war. If you're our strategic partner, then you can't go blocking anything for us." Sagar Magani, Washington.
You can find more on this and other stories online at voanews.com. From the VOA News Center in Washington, D.C., this is VOA News. The families of the two victims in the London Bridge stabbings on Friday have released statements to pay tribute to them as well as to request privacy. Reuters' Jason Albano reports.
The families of the two people killed in London on Friday have released heartfelt tributes. Saskia Jones and Jack Merritt were fatally stabbed in an attack on London Bridge. They were involved in a prisoner rehabilitation conference, which their attacker had also been attending. The family of Jones said the 23-year-old had a wonderful thirst for knowledge and a great passion for providing invaluable support to victims of criminal injustice. Merritt's family described him as thoughtful and empathetic while working towards helping people in the criminal justice system. The attacker, identified as Usman Khan, had been convicted of terrorism in 2012, but was let out early.
That's Reuters' Jason Albano reporting. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter is hospitalized again. AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
The Carter Center said in a statement Monday afternoon, former President Jimmy Carter was admitted to a hospital in America's Georgia over the weekend for treatment of a urinary tract infection. The 95-year-old Carter has had multiple hospital visits in 2019, including a stay for hip replacement surgery and treatment for a fractured pelvis. In 2015, Carter was treated for cancer after being diagnosed with melanoma and announcing the cancer had spread to other parts of his body. His liver was partially removed, and after treatment for brain lesions and radiation and immunotherapy, Carter said he was cancer-free. Carter has lived longer than any U.S. president. I'm Mike Gracia.
A new wave of abuse lawsuits could hit the Catholic Church like never before. AP correspondent Walter Ratliff.
A wave of new laws in 15 states allow people to make claims of sexual abuse going back decades. This could bring a flood of lawsuits against the Roman Catholic Church that could surpass anything seen so far in its clergy abuse crisis. Associated Press interviews with attorneys and clergy abuse watchdog groups found it could result in at least 5,000 new cases against the church and more than $4 billion in payouts. California, New York, and New Jersey are among eight states that go furthest in allowing sex abuse claims, no matter how old. Catholic leaders worry about the difficulty of defending such old cases, and more dioceses are considering bankruptcy and victim compensation funds. I'm Walter Ratliff.
The Trump administration has quietly released $105 million in military aid to Lebanon that it had been holding up for reasons that are still unclear. There's no indication the money was held up for political favors. A senior State Department official said Monday there were questions about the efficacy of U.S. aid to the Lebanese armed forces. The aid was unfrozen last week without fanfare, and Congress was notified in writing on Monday. I'm Marissa Melton. You're listening to VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's main opposition party calls for reforms to ensure credibility of future elections.
The concerns that we express is that our electoral system requires a total overhaul through the amendment of the rules that guide our election.
Kola Olobodinya is the spokesperson for the opposition PDP of Nigeria. Namibia's main opposition candidate supports an audit of the just-ended election. We'll discuss the candidates in Guinea-Bissau's December 29 runoff election, and organizers of a December 30 protest calling for President George Weah to step down say it will go ahead despite government rejection.
Our constitution provides that all we need to do is inform the government that we wish to exercise our constitutional right under Article 17. So it is not the minister's place to determine whether or not we assemble. We will assemble.
Henry Costa is the chairman of the Council of Patriots. The climate crisis is causing hunger for millions of Africans, and Uganda's National Drug Authority recalls more than a million condoms from the market. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, is calling for reforms that it says will ensure the credibility and transparency of future elections. PDP spokesman Kola Olobodeya says the party will work with the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, that the party will work with them to expedite measures to prevent future electoral disputes. His remarks come after the party said the lack of reforms led to the recent disputed elections, which it said also led to politically related violence. Supporters of the ruling All Progressives Congress Party said the PDP's reforms are impractical and a face-saving move after losing the vote. VOA's Peter Clotty spoke with spokesman Kola Olobodeya about the proposed reforms.
The concerns that we express is that our electoral system requires a total overhaul through the amendment of the rules that guide our election, be it the 1999 Constitution as amended or the Electoral Act 2010 as amended. It's the fact that in the life of the 8th Senate, an amendment was proposed to the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari, to allow for electronic voting. He refused to assent that bill into law. We need to go, we must return to it as part of the electoral reform. And we also pointed out the fact that under our laws, the smart candidate has no place. It is not recognized in law. It is just an administrative process of electioneering, basically for INEC. That's totally unacceptable.
What do you say to critics who say that the suggestions that you are making are irrelevant and not practical enough, and that you are just making this just to stay relevant because you lost the recent election?
That is absolutely incorrect. And I say so because when President Muhammadu Buhari was elected into office in 2015, he applauded the process that enabled him to win the election and got elected into office after previous trials where he failed. Mr. President, President Muhammadu Buhari, came out and told Nigerians repeatedly that the use of cadres enabled him to win elections. What we are saying today, particularly as it concerns the 2019 election, further amendments to the processes of electioneering that will have refined our elections were stopped by the same government of President Muhammadu Buhari. We are simply asking as a political party that if the process that brought him into power in 2015 was very credible, he should return the country back to that process of 2015 that made the election credible and that enabled him to win popular vote.
When you engaged the Electoral Commission, what response did they give you about when to address some of these concerns that you expressed to them?
What they have said to us is that they had taken note of everything that had been said and that they would deliver a report to the hierarchy of their commission, whom they expect to take action.
Is the PDP satisfied with the response, and will you continue to engage the commissioners themselves to address this concern?
The People's Democratic Party will continue to engage the hierarchy of INEC until they bring a bill that is satisfactory to majority of Nigerians before the National Assembly for amendment of our electoral laws. We will move further to engage even INEC through every legitimate means that is provided for in our constitution and in our electoral laws to ensure that what is right, what can provide for credible, free, and fair electoral processes is agreed to.
Kola Ologbondeya is the spokesman for the Nigerian main opposition People's Democratic Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Abuja. Guinea-Bissau's December 29 presidential runoff election will take place between two former prime ministers, Domingo Simões Pereira and Umaro Sissoko Embalo. Incumbent President José Mário Vaz lost the November 24 election. Pereira represents the ruling African Party for the Independence of Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde, while Embalo represents an opposition party composed of PAIGC defectors. Amadou Djamaka is a senior manager at the Guinea-Bissau National Television. He says both candidates stand a chance of winning.
They have a lot of in common. They have international connections. One from the West, DSP, Domingo Simões Pereira from PAIGC, and the other from East, Umar Sissoko Embalo. They all were ex-prime minister and now big politician with many Guineans behind them. So everyone has the chance of being elected because they have popularity to do so.
Amadou, the two candidates are both members of the ruling PAIGC party. How are they different?
It is difficult to determine the differences between politicians because for me, they all are equals. But in this election, it is noted that the PAIGC candidate, for some reasons, has the support of a good portion of the international community. And the MADEM candidate, in turn, of local charisma. Opposition support and a good majority of the population.
By voting the way they did, do you think the people of Guinea-Bissau were sending a message to their leaders, particularly the ruling PAIGC, to cut out the political bickering and focus on what the people want?
I think the people want an inclusive democracy. In 2000s, all the power were concentrated in one party and everything went wrong. The PRS in the past. And the same mistake was repeated in 2014 with PIGC having all the majority chairs. So the people decided now that no party will ever own all of this. So they denied the majority to all and evoked parliamentary and governing inclusion. So the people are demanding the unity of the Guinean tower to the desired progress.
Who do you think has the chance of winning the second round? And what is the possibility that some of the smaller political parties could join with one of the two candidates?
I cannot determine who will win. And my biggest wish is that Guinea-Bissau wins always. Whichever one wins, let it be one that the people really choose. However, alliances will be determined in the second round. The PAIGC candidate Domingo Simões Pereira seems to be isolated by everyone, while the MADEM candidate is increasingly gaining sympathy and support from other candidates such as Carlos Gomes Jr., José Mário Vaz, and Nuno Gomes Nabian. If this support becomes all official, including PRS, the third major party, Umar Sissoko Embalo can be the next president.
Amadou Djamaka is a senior manager at the Guinea-Bissau National Television. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bissau. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 3rd. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. The presidential candidate for Namibia's main opposition party, the Popular Democratic Movement, the PDM, says the Electoral Commission failed to administer transparent and credible elections. McHenry Vinani also says his party supports calls for an independent audit of the just-concluded general election. His remarks followed a meeting of opposition groups to discuss plans to challenge the results of both the presidential and legislative polls. Vinani tells viewers Peter Clotty that all legal options are on the table depending on the findings of his party's compilation of evidence of the alleged voter irregularities.
Our impression is that the Electoral Commission did not do a thorough job to ensure a credible and transparent election. Fundamentally, we have a problem with the EVMs, the electronic voting machines, that do not print out a verifiable audited paper trail. So the election does not ensure the tenets of democracy, which is transparency. That's one. Two, there are a number of anomalies in terms of the results verification. The EVM would print at one instance where the PDM, our party, got 7,000 votes. The elect form 6 and 1 would be written as 6,200. And you would wonder, why is there an anomaly? Why is the results getting lesser? The original one would be higher. The one written on the elect forms are lesser. So we are collating all the irregularities that have happened throughout the election. We are well aware that the election results were even announced while some of the constituencies were not collated.
If I understand what you are saying clearly, are you therefore saying the Electoral Commission did not administer free, fair, transparent or credible elections?
We are saying they have not done a credible job in administering our election, yes.
So what steps will the opposition take to address some of these concerns?
We are consulting all our regional ground forces to give us all the anomalies. We are collating all the anomalies. On the basis of that, we are going to gauge whether the anomalies that we are having on our system is enough and warrants a legal recourse or not. So by this coming Wednesday, we'll be able to know exactly what has our ground forces collated, and we are speaking to regions. And then on that basis, we are consulting with other political actors to be able to make sure that are we going to apply. We are still within the realm of the days that we should petition the Supreme Court and the Electoral Court in the event of the National Assembly elections being disputed. So at this point in time, we are doing collation, but we have good evidence to believe that there were a lot of anomalies that were deliberately done in order to favor one candidate over others.
Was this decision a consensus based on your recent meetings with other opposition political parties to come up with this to address some of your concerns about what you said were challenges of impropriety or irregularity during the election?
Yes, it was a consensus built by all the opposition forces of the country.
So what's the next line of action to address this concern? Because soon the president will be sworn in to begin his second and final full year term.
So we are not saying at this point in time that we are going to court. We are collating. After collation, on Wednesday we will have a very firm answer whether political parties would go to court or not.
McHenry Vinani is the presidential candidate for Namibia's main opposition party, the Popular Democratic Movement. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Windhoek. In Liberia, the organizers of the December 30 protest calling on President George Weah to step down say their protest will take place as planned, despite the government's refusal to grant them a permit. In a letter to the Council of Patriots, COP, Justice Minister Frank Musa Ding denied the group a permit to protest, saying such protests calling on President Weah to step down is unconstitutional and bespeaks treason. He warned that the leadership of the COP, the group organizing the protest, will be culpable and liable under the law. Henry Costa, the founder of the Council of Patriots, said the protest will take place because the citizens have the right under the Constitution to do just that.
Mr. Bote, the COP, of which I'm chairman, is not bothered by the Minister of Justice's letter because we did not make a request to be allowed to protest, because we do not need to do that. Our Constitution provides that all we need to do is inform the government that we wish to exercise our constitutional right under Article 17. So it is not the minister's place to determine whether or not we assemble. We will assemble. And we did not write him to ask for a permit. We wrote asking to provide security, as we did for the June 7 protest, where 20,000 people came out.
The minister goes into extent to respond to your constitutional right to protest. But he also says that the fact that you're demanding the resignation of the president, that is unconstitutional. And it bespeaks of treason, an offense which he said is against the internal security of the state, quoting Article 76 of the Liberian Constitution.
Article 15 of the same Liberian Constitution states very clearly that you have the right to free speech and freedom of expression. It is my right to say I want the president to step down. There is nothing treasonous about that. If I were to use physical force with the intent to cause the president to step down, that would suffice as treasonous. But we are not using force. We are peaceably assembling in our tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, because we are very sick and tired of the president's incompetence to govern the country. The country is sinking. Spiraling inflation, high food prices, shortage of our own Liberian currency. The banks are turning you away. You cannot get your own money. People are sick and they're dying in hospitals, getting turned away because they cannot draw money from their own bank accounts to make down payments in order to be admitted into hospitals across the country. So we are saying enough is enough. And in all of this crisis, the president has yet to utter a word of hope and assurance. And so we are saying in a very clear and unambiguous tone, Mr. President, the job is too big for you. Please step down.
I did speak with the Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Mr. Nathaniel McGee, on my program, and he says that these protests are engineered by opposition parties that lost the 2017 election. He says that President Weah will not step down because he was elected by the people. You, the protesters, calling for his resignation, should wait until 2023. It will be up to the Liberian people to decide if they should re-elect the president.
Mr. Bote, on June 7th, it was 20,000 Liberians who turned out in the largest peaceful protest in the history of our country. It was not political parties. On December 30th, it will be market women who are struggling to sell their produce, to make ends meet, to put food on their tables for their families, to send their kids to school. It is civil servants who are working and have not taken pay for several months. By the way, I listened to the interview you had with the minister. He admitted that they owe several months. They owe civil servants 5-6 months, yet the president flies private jet everywhere he goes with large delegation. So this protest is organized by the Council of Patriots, comprising of market women, shoeshine boys, ordinary folks, civil servants, and those people like myself. We're the ones who are doing this protest. It is not political parties. And we cannot wait for 2023, because at the rate at which the government is destroying our country, there might not be a stable country by 2023.
The minister concludes his letter warning you, the organizers of this protest, that you will be held personally and individually and collectively culpable and liable under the law for consequences associated with your actions.
Well, we are not perturbed by the feeble threat of a weak government that cannot pay its own police force, that cannot pay its own army. The threat of such a weak government, that threat does not scare us. We will come out on December 30th, and we will stay on the street until President Weah steps down.
Henry Costa is the founder of the Council of Patriots, organizers of the coming December 30 protest in Liberia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. state of Delaware. Justice Minister Frank Musa Ding declined our request for an interview, referring us instead to his letter to the Council of Patriots. Tens of millions of people in southern and eastern Africa are facing emergency food insecurity, partly caused by climate change, with half of them children, according to the charity Save the Children. The area has been hit by extreme cyclones, flooding, and drought in recent months, and scientists warn that the region is warming much faster than other parts of the world. As Henry Richwell reports, aid agencies are calling on world leaders meeting at the climate conference in Madrid to commit to bigger cuts in greenhouse gases.
Cyclone Idai smashed into Mozambique in March this year, killing thousands of people and destroying entire settlements. The storm, one of the biggest on record, is estimated to have caused more than $2 billion worth of damage across the region. A month later, Mozambique was hit by another storm, Cyclone Kenneth, killing dozens more people.
Never before has this country been hit by two cyclones in the same season.
Save the Children says 2019 will be remembered as the year that the climate crisis devastated parts of eastern and southern Africa. The charity warns that climate change contributes to at least 33 million people in the region facing emergency levels of food insecurity, with more than 16 million of them children.
The link to climate change is actually the compounding effect of emergency after emergency after emergency. So the ability for people to recover from a shock, like a drought or a flood at the moment even, is getting less and less and less, and therefore their livelihoods are slowly but surely being eroded and literally washed away.
A 2015 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report shows temperatures rising in southern Africa at twice the global rate. Save the Children says leaders of industrialized nations must commit to bigger cuts in greenhouse gas emissions and greater support for those most affected by climate change.
If you are a child growing up in eastern and southern Africa, your chances of survival are currently being affected by actions that are taken by people in a completely different part of the world to which you have very little control or effect on.
29,000 delegates are meeting in Madrid for the COP25 climate conference. US President Donald Trump is not attending, having withdrawn from the landmark Paris Climate Agreement, which he says would unfairly penalize the United States economy. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Uganda's National Drug Authority, a government body that regulates medicines and pharmaceuticals, has recalled more than a million condoms from the market. David Nahamya, an official at the National Drug Authority, says the condoms did not meet international standards and could expose people to diseases. Mugumi David Rakaringi reports from Kampala.
David Nahamya, the secretary to the National Drug Authority, or NDA, confirms they found two unauthorized batches of condoms on the market during their routine surveillance. Nahamya says condoms of the Lifeguard brand failed tests at NDA's quality control laboratory.
We are always checking on the market what is prevailing. So we came across two batches which failed analysis, and we had to take a regulatory decision. This regulatory decision was to recall the products from the market because they are not fit for use. We have so far managed to recall more than 800,000 out of 1 million. That is representing 80%. And of course, these ones, they have to be destroyed.
The two batches of imported condoms were manufactured in May 2019 and were expected to expire in April 2024, while another, manufactured in April 2019, had the expiry date of March 2024. A batch is considered as not fulfilling standards if there are three or more condoms out of 315 sampled.
Of course, each condom has a label claim. Maybe this is the size, it's the length. Then, you know, the lubricant. What is the quantity of the lubricant? We also have to know the thickness. But then this one is in particular failed two parameters. One of them is freedom from holes, and then the busting strength.
Nahamya says his team is still deployed to ensure that all the remaining condoms are retrieved because they could expose people to sexual transmitted diseases or STDs. Dr. Nelson Musoba, who heads Uganda AIDS Commission, says it is important for anyone who could have used these condoms to test for STDs.
If you find that what you use falls within the batch, you know, of what NDA has announced, then to take precaution, you know, if you can trace the partner with whom you had sex, both of you should test and know your status. And if one of you is found to be HIV positive, speak to the health worker because there are mechanisms in place to know how to address depending on the time period when you use these condoms.
Karusa Kiragu, the UNAIDS director in Uganda, applauded NDA for having swiftly acted.
For us, what it tells us is that the government has mechanisms to do this, the government is able to move quickly on it, and the government is able to act quickly. And that can only be seen as a good thing. And I think it instills confidence in Ugandans.
That's reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi in Kampala. And that is it for this Tuesday, December 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.